to usher him down. Prophet 2. So that's verse 2:26. With holy rites prescribed by the Veda, must the ceremony on conception and other sacrifices be performed for twice born men, which sanctify the body and purify it from sin in this life and after death. By burnt oblations during the mother's pregnancy, by Jata Karma, the ceremony after birth, the Chota Karma, and the Manjibanda, the tying of a sacred girdle of Munja grass, is the taint derived from both parents removed from twice born men. By the study of the Veda, by vows, by burnt oblations, by the recitation of sacred texts, by the acquisition of threefold sacred science, by offering to the gods, rishis, and manes, by the procreation of sons, by the great sacrifice, by Shrauta rice, this human body is made fit for union with Brahman. Okay. Then, so here is defining the sacraments, the importance of them. So that means that anyone who's twice born, then the ceremony starting with conception rite, Garbhadan, and then on, all those sacraments should be performed. So then that means then they will be pure. By those activities, then whatever is received from the parents, whatever impurities is there from the parents, then is removed from the child. Because the parents always have impurities, and the child is a combination of their consciousness, so naturally their impurities will come with it. So by these early rites, then these impurities from the parents are removed. Then from other performances we see of sadhana, studying the scriptures, associating with devotees, all these things, then one is able to be connected to the Supreme Lord. So that's the whole idea, is that the sacraments are there to create good impression. Because impression is actually what we base our whole life on. Our whole value system is based on our impressions. So if our impressions are good, whether they're conscious or unconscious, but whether our impressions are good, then we make good, basically, decisions. If our impressions are bad, then we make bad decisions. So it's a very simple thing. That's how our value system works. So you'll find somebody, it's like you take a word, a topical word, or a word that's a buzzword. That buzzword to one person is just a normal word. To another person, it's something very important. That's because of their samskar. So because of their experience, they've had a bad experience. Therefore, for them, this word means that bad experience. Well, another person who hasn't had that bad experience, the word has a different meaning. It's just a common, ordinary meaning. Like, let's say you say camping. Okay, so one person camping, you know, it's like, okay, people go out and camp, okay, it means something that some strange people do. Other people, they've gone camping, they have a good experience, then camping, that means holiday, festival, another person went out, they went camping, got attacked by grizzly bears, this, that, so many things, they're camping, oh, that's a freaky thing. Does that understand? So your whole interpretation on your, everything you do in your life, your whole value system is all based on these samskaras. You know, so this is the importance of samskar, is that if you get good samskar, then your impressions will be good. You'll base it on that. If they're pious, then you'll make pious value judgments. If they're devotional, you'll make devotional value judgments. If they're sinful, you'll make sinful value judgments. So that's the whole thing. That's why you see some people, just by nature, you see children, they just like to make trouble, like Vena. He just took pleasure in harassing others. So that's samskar. He just has bad samskars. And so because of that, then he has bad desires. It's very, very simple. So therefore, then by performance of these auspicious sacraments, then the living entity is purified. So those unwanted things that are there, that they gain from the parents, or to purify them so they'll make more pious decisions, then that's better. Of course, piety isn't our goal. But we see it's easier for the pious person to surrender. That's what Krishna mentions in the Gita. Four kinds of pious people surrender. Four kinds of sinful people don't. Therefore, it's always an advantage to be more inclined towards the piety. Right? That's the principle. But we're not interested in being pious. We're interested in being devotional. Right? So for us, piety actually means devotion. But the point he is being given here is varnashram is based on you naturally make good decisions because your interaction with the person on the street or with another person that you work with or your family members or all that, it's going to naturally just by default reset at whatever your samskaras are. Right? It's not a matter of, well, we're devotees, we don't care. Yes, but your samskaras don't care either. You're going to deal with your wife, your husband, your children, your friends, your business partner, the person you meet on the street, according to your samskaras, not according to your devotional attitude, until that devotional attitude becomes your samskara. Does that make sense? Once you've purified yourself to a point where devotional attitude is your attitude 24 hours a day, then you don't have to worry about these things because the work is already accomplished. You're trying to get to that devotional plot. Before that, it's going to depend upon your previous background. It's just the way it is. You go to New York, devotees from New York, they act like New Yorkers. They don't act like people from LA. They absolutely don't. They act exactly like New Yorkers. You go to LA, they act like LA people. They don't act like New Yorkers at all. You go to South, then they act like gentlemen. Right? Because that's the way Southern, you always hear the Southern gentleman. You go up north to Chicago, they'll act like people up there. You go to England, they act like English. You go to Europe, they act like Europe. So you go to Africa, they act like that. You go to China, they act like Chinese. They're all chanting Hare Krishna. They're all initiated. They're all doing service. But until that time, then those things just remain. They have to be replaced by spiritual samskar. So the whole idea is for a child, the child isn't the one sitting there chanting 16 rounds a day, right? The child in the womb is not. Maybe, if you're fortunate, you attract such a child, okay, great. You know, Pallad in the womb was hearing in the instructions of Narad Muni, he was very advanced. But, if not, then you give them a head start by the impressions that you put upon them are there that will give them their natural social interaction and devotional inclination will be there. They may take it or not, that's individual. But unless you give them that chance, then what? The parents may say, well, we chant, we don't care. Okay, that's you chant. What about your kid? Kids chanting? Your 3-year-old is chanting 16 rounds a day, right? Everybody's 3-year-old chants 16 rounds, right? Everybody's 6-month-old baby chants 16 rounds. Everybody's just born baby chants 16 rounds. Everybody's baby in the womb chants. No. So that's the whole idea. The Vedic culture is because they are not that mature to have taken it up, right? Except for the rare soul. Therefore, then we have to give them the opportunity. So that's what it's for. And we see they have effect, these things. For adults, we don't worry about it. They chant Hare Krishna. Chanting is the most powerful samskara. Right? That will clear away anything. So that we don't have to worry about. This is in connection with the children. Is that the adults, they should take it seriously for their children. It shouldn't be, well, I was born a Malechya Yamana and, you know, went through all nonsense and broke all the regular principles and I turned out okay. But that's not someone who cares for the children. Okay? It's just like, well, I was born in the slums and I clawed my way up to the top and I became wealthy and all that, so my kid can go through that and he'll be fine. No. The person who came to the top, he affords all facility of someone who is in a, you know, has, you know, a particular social status, a good social status. He doesn't have his kids start off in the gutter. So the same way as we may have been born in the gutter, we may have been saved. That means now we try to give that the benefit of that opportunity to the next generation. So therefore, some start. And we see is for, that's the one, but on the other side is that performance of sadhana, that everybody has to be performing. Right? That it doesn't means we're chanting. We still study the Veda. We still are taking vows. You know, we take the Ekadasi Vrata or Kartik Vrata. Like this, we take our Vrata of initiation. Like that.
sacrifice, recitation of sacred texts. We're always studying the scriptures here in Srimad Bhagavatam Gita. The threefold science is Rig Yajur Samaveda, so we're getting the essence of that through the Bhagavatam. Offering to the gods, rishis, and mains, so we are worshipping Krishna, so then all the gods, rishis, and mains are taken care of, but Krishna still needs to be worshipped. By the procreation of sons, that's not so important for us, because for those who go to the heavenly planets, that's very important for them. By the great sacrifices, then we also take care of that by worshipping Krishna and the forefather, and the acharyas. Shraddha rites, then we have our own rites. So we see in general then these things are also fit within what we do. So that still has to be performed. These are samskar, these purify. So in other words, you have the inherent material samskars that give the child a head start, and you have the spiritual. So both have to be there. Okay. So then Brahmacharya Ashram. Any questions on this? Shrauta rites, these are all the rites other than these samskars and the great sacrifices. Remember, we have the householder has to do all those sacred rites, have to worship the demigods and the forethought, all those. So outside of that, like horse sacrifices, soma yagyas, these kind of things, then they have to do something. I mean, sacrifice has to be there. Like that. If someone has the means, they have the wealth, then they have to perform big sacrifices in these previous ages. You had the money, you had to perform a soma yagya. You had to do this. You couldn't just sit around with all your money and do nothing. Because this was sadhana then. You didn't have money, you didn't do it. Then you'd stick to, studying the scriptures more or chanting your Gayatri more or other kind of ways. But if you had wealth, then you had to do these sacrifices. Because through the sacrifice, then the demigods are taken care of, and so much charity must be given to the Brahmins. A huge amount of charity has to be given. So the whole idea is you accumulate more money, then it should be given away in sacrifice. So that way then the demigods and the Brahmins, and also because you're feeding everybody, everybody gets fed on these things, these big yagyas. It's a big, big festival. People come together, there's discussions and scriptures, like the Ramayana. That was sung during when Ramachandra was doing his, I think, Ashwamedha Yajna. Like that. He was doing an Ashwamedha Yajna. Then Lav and Kush, which were his sons, they came there because they were taught the Ramayana by Valmiki. So they didn't know who, they had heard about Ram, but they had never met him. And I don't think they knew he was their father. He just heard about it. So they knew the Ramayana perfectly. They could sing the whole thing. They'd play on the veenas and sing. So they happened to be coming by, and there was this big sacrifice, so they were invited in. They saw that these were very pure brahmacharis, and they were invited in to see, and they'd get some charity and stuff like that. Then when they learned that they knew this, they said, we can sing this. So that I know of, then they sang the whole Ramayana at that time. So then that then ended the Ramayana, Uttara Ramayana, then it goes into then after. Because then they find out afterwards, then someone says, do you know who this is? They said, no. He says, that person you just sang about, that's wrong. They looked at him and said, no, he's not. He said, what do you mean, no, he's not? Here he is. He says, no, Ram's what can't be found without Sita. There's no Sita there, so this isn't Ram. Sita Ram, right? There's no Sita, no Ram. Then, Ram is feeling bad. And then they, this and that. And then they ask what happened, like this. And then she's been banished to the forest. It says, oh, well, this guy, we're not singing about him anymore. They took their Venus, threw him on the ground, broke him, walked out. Says, we've been singing about this guy. And then, he acts like this. We're not singing about him. Like this. It was a whole trip. So then they went back, and I think then there was some other sacrifice or something, and the horse came around, and Lava and Krishna caught the horse, said, this horse isn't going anywhere. This is Ram's horse. He says, this isn't going anywhere. And we're Brahmas, let him stop us. So they sent all kinds of people and this and that. And they distracted all of them. They sent Hanuman So they had the other kids sit down at the river and chant Ram Nam, so they know you just go there. You know, Lakshman, everyone came to fight because they knew Ramayana. They knew everybody's, what weapons they had and what's their power and weakness. So they knew how to defeat everybody. So then at the end, Ram had to come. And then then Ram and Lav Kush were going to fight. Then Sita came out and revealed, this is your father, this is your son, like that. But then it was kind of like the end of the line. And so once they figured that out, then Bhumi Devi came and took Sita. So then she left.
Sometimes parents try to do, you know, some of these sacrifices or sacrifices for the welfare of the children. You know, parents hoping the child goes this way and the kids go.
That's another thing, but at least you've done your bit to put him in the right place. It says you can take a horse to water, you can't make him drink. But if the parent doesn't take the horse to water, then he can be, that's neglectful. But if they don't want to take it, that's another thing. Because the samskara is long-reaching. Because you generally see also these kids come back later. How long can it be a nonsense? You know? Because the point is they know it's their culture. It is their culture. It's just a matter they want to follow it or not. See, is that for the first generation, they're accepting a new culture. So they're rebelling against their own culture to take it up. So the first generation rebels against their own culture, their natural culture, to take up Krishna consciousness. Mm-hmm. So depending upon if that attitude is still left in the consciousness of the parents, then that may go into the children. So they'll be rebellious against their culture, which is now Krishna consciousness. You know? But at the same time, because Krishna consciousness is the proper culture, then with time they come back to it. It just, it's a waste of, they lose some years, you know, 10 years, or whatever, however many years it is. So that's the thing, it comes through in the consciousness, because you can take it back. It's exact. It just doesn't, see, the principle always remains the same, the detail changes. And I could give an example, we've given it many times. The parents, they go to the temple when they feel it's proper. So they've decided that, okay, every Sunday we'll go to the temple, you know, and attend the program. You know, we'll be good boys and girls, and we'll go to the lecture and to the feast, right, rather than just the feast, right? So then they wonder why their children don't want to come. You know, why their children are different than them. You know, I go to the temple, they don't go. But actually, they're not looking at it from the right angle. They're looking at the detail. The principle is that they go when they feel it's important. So they've decided once a week on Sunday is important. But the kids decide, because once a week on Sunday, not always something's happening. But at festival days, something's happening. So that's important to them. So they go at that time. So therefore, you'll see second generation always at all the festivals, because something's happening. So then they'll go. Like that. So there's absolutely no difference between their consciousness and their parents and the way of the samskara of decision making. You see the connection? So that thing, that is the problem with that, it gets freaky. Because then the parents actually have to look at their own values and see that, you know, their children are just them. You know? The Hungarian saying, the apple doesn't fall very far from the tree. Like that. It's the same. It means what is planted, the seed that is planted, that plant you get. So the consciousness of the parent at the time of conception, that's what you get. So that's the science. Now the only remedy to anything, to actually make anything auspicious and good, is a devotional process. So by chanting, by rendering service, by all these things, then that's what comes out, that's what you get. So that's very, very, very nice. So therefore, despite whatever the background, everything can be perfected by that process. So it's been perfected enough, the kids may have very natural inclinations. If it hasn't, then by association, by the children taking up the process, they can perfect themselves. So that's what's so wonderful, is that even if the ideal situation hasn't been attained, by the devotional process,
It doesn't matter what the past was, it can be attained. That's the beauty of it. So all it is the Vedic culture is just showing what things could make it easier. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, it's much easier to get a horse to drink water if you have it right in front of the trough. Right? And the trough has water in it. It's a lot harder when, you know, you're, you know, half a mile away from the trough with the horse. You know, then it's like you're telling the horse to drink water and the horse is okay, well, where's the water? You know, what is this water? I don't see any water. You know? But if you put a trough there and you put a whole bunch of horses drinking water, there's every chance that that horse will drink. Does that make sense? So that's the whole beauty of it. We're only saying these things strongly so that the devotees are actually introspective and see where the problems lie. Otherwise, the tendency is to always blame someone else. That's the conditioned soul's tendency. It's always someone else's fault. It's never their fault. Because we always, because of the principle of justice, we always see our situation generally as just and right. You know, we're the standard. And so then we judge everything by that. And then from that, then we come up that others, they are breaking the standard. And because of this, therefore, I'm suffering. It's nothing to do with me. Just like Duryodhana, it didn't matter. Dhritarashtra, it didn't matter what you said. They were right, everybody else is wrong. Duryodhana doesn't want to share the kingdom with Yudhishthira. What's the problem? You know, that's all. That's the bottom line. So therefore, then everybody's giving advice in that, and Drona and Bhishma and that, they're always partial to these Pandavas. Why are they partial? It's just because they're so nice and virtuous, but that, what has that got to do with I want to run the kingdom? You know, we're on the battlefield. Drona's not fighting hard enough because of his partiality. Bhishma's not fighting hard enough because of his partiality to that. This is the way Duryodhana looks at it. Even though they tell him, hey, God's on their side, so there's no question you're going to win. You know, when you got God, nothing goes your way if you're against him. But it doesn't matter, because what he wants is to win the battle and be the sovereign king. So he judges everything by that. Right? So that's the tendency. Right? Yudhishthira follows this culture, so therefore he doesn't have these tendencies. Duryodhana picks and chooses. Therefore, he has the problem. That's why these stories are given, because it's practical. So that's the point. I mean, if you look at it, any problems that devotees say are happening in the movement, none of them are spiritual. Absolutely none of them. There's not one spiritual problem that anybody talks about. They may call it spiritual just because they know it'll fly better, because if it's a material problem, then most won't take it seriously, you know, unless it's money, you know, that's okay. But the real thing is the culture hasn't been followed, or they're seeing a lack. Authorities are too strong, or people don't interact in a pleasant way or cultured way. I mean, you take it back to it, it's just relationships don't work in a nice cultured way. That's all it is. Bottom line is that. If you think about it, everything goes back to that. It goes to that. Maybe so many problems, so many. No, it all goes back to this. They're not following the culture. Philosophy, you get all the devotees, they all agree. One or two points, and maybe some, you know, someone's more read, less read, more thought about it, less thought about it. So maybe some. But basically, philosophy is all together. But when it comes to culture, then you have like an unlimited plethora of ideas. So therefore, it's there's speculation. Right? Philosophy without religion is speculation. Varnashrams are religion. Right? On the material platform, the social platform, economic platform. On the transcendental platform, our religion is changing the whole name. That's the Bhagavad. But when we're dealing, interfacing on the material platform, then Varnashrams are religion. Because it addresses the inherent nature of the conditioned living entity and the material elements that they deal with. Does that make any sense? Yeah? So that's the whole whole thing. It comes back to that. That's why Prabhupada would push so much the point of Varnashram. Not that it's that important for us, but for the conditioned living entity, he has to have an identity and he has to know how to socially exchange with other people. If he doesn't know how to socially exchange with other people, then there's a problem. So Varnashram gives the solution to all that. The Bhagavat platform also gives it. Trinadapi Sunichinaturovapisishna. But it's not a popular thing these days. Being humble, being tolerant, especially tolerant, no tolerance. You know. Email, you don't have to be tolerant. You just punch out your thing, press send, voila. You know, you've gotten it off your chest. You've said just what you wanted, even though what you said, how you said it, breaks all etiquette. But that doesn't matter because expression of my feelings is the standard. You know, but unfortunately it's not God's standard, so that's another thing. You know, and because of that, so-called we're supposed to be making progress, but we're busy just, you know, breaking down the whole social system. Because there is no interaction. There is no love, trust, any of this thing. So that's the importance of culture, is that we know what the etiquette is, we try to follow it, but that takes sense control. It takes purity. That's the thing. Devotees write off Varnashram because actually it's not easy. It takes purity. Oh, we're not up to that standard. But are we trying? No. One has to be pure in sense control to be able to follow it because you have to be tolerant. The same thing. Chanting Hare Krishna also. Right? Means it says that anyone can chant the holy name, right? But that doesn't mean that we remain like that. You know, Magrari was a hunter. You know, he takes up the chanting, but he doesn't remain a hunter. Right? It's always talking about the chandala, you know, who's chanting is better than the Brahmin, you know, who's following all the rules and doesn't. But that doesn't mean he's still a chandala. He's not still out there eating dogs and doing the whole thing. He may have been from that chandala background, but now he's a devotee, so he follows the devotional principles. You know, so it's not good enough that how we are, we just remain. We have to progress. We have to move forward. And the wonderful thing is, it's just so simple. You just chant, hear Bhagavatam, associate with devotees, worship the deity, live in the Dham, and you move forward. You know, render service whatever you can, you know, preach however you can, and you just and it moves forward. One has to accept that that's actually the solution to all problems in the world, not something else. There are no material solutions to material problems unless they come from the Veda. That makes sense. So that's why only it's a study, you know. And of course, studying of Varnashram is mentioned in the third chapter of Gita only for the leaders. It is true. It's only leaders, only those with a leadership mood can actually appreciate it. Others may or may not see the importance. Any other questions?
It seems like those samskaras which you want to get is a good or bad, they're based on association, good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
So it means like for a child getting such samskaras, because child of course cannot appreciate or understand this, so, but also it is how it works in this
Much consciousness.
Yeah. So that's what you just described
in the culture. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because if you're in a pious environment, the tendency is to do pious things. So pious things are always connected to Guru Sadhana Shastra. Mm-hmm. There's no question of anything pious not being connected to Guru Sadhana Shastra. So now, from Guru Sadhana Shastra just being pious, it's a small step to get to Guru Sadhana Shastra, which is devotional. It's just a matter of whether you're studying a shastra from the material angle or you're studying it from the spiritual angle.
It's just like Prabhupada gives the example. The karmi is cooking, and we're cooking. We're going to the market, they're going to the market. We're cooking, they're cooking. We're eating, they're eating. So on the material platform, it's exactly the same. You know, you have a vegetarian, you know, how you say, pious Hindu going to the market and buying some potatoes, and you have the devotee going to the market buying potatoes, right? And he's going to make a vegetarian, you know, Indian preparation out of his potatoes, and the devotee's going to make it. And the Hindu's going to eat it, and the devotee's going to eat it. The difference is the Hindu did it because it's pious, because they're vegetarian, and they'll offer it to the gods, right? Well, Krishna, well, the devotee will be doing it to please Krishna, and will offer it to Krishna. So therefore, it's transcendental. But the form of it's exactly the same. Okay? There might be some details that change, because in the devotional process, you don't have to worry about really about the demigods and the forefathers, you know, the Buddhas and all. You don't have to worry about that. You associate with devotees, so that takes care of them. And you worship Krishna, and that takes care of the demigods and the forefathers and the Buddhas. Like that. So everybody is taken care of by associating with devotees and worshiping Krishna. So then those details that are details for worshiping the demigods, worshiping the forefathers, worshiping the Buddhas that take care of your house and other things like that, those details aren't important, because you're already worshiping Krishna. Because the point is you have to worship those who are above you, who are benefiting you. So Krishna is the one who's in control. Krishna is the ability. Krishna does all these things. So therefore, then you're already taking care of that. You are following the rules. You're following the higher. So that's technically how it's cut. It's not that, oh, we're Krishna, so we don't care about anything. Why does worshiping Krishna, we don't care about anything else? That's because Krishna, being the supreme controller, he is actually the control everybody else is working under. So the demigod, the forefathers, the Buddhas, they're only carrying out the offices that Krishna has empowered them to do. So if you're worshipping Krishna, you don't have to worship the others, because it's him giving them the power anyway. Does that make sense? So actually, they're only running the universe for Krishna's devotees. That's the only reason they're running it. Right? And to maintain prisoners. But their actual happiness is running for the devotees. That's the real happiness. And everybody else is just out of their kindness that they, you know, want to have. But it's actually the Lord who's taking care of everybody. So in that way it's cut. And by associating with devotees, devotees are the topmost Brahmins, because they understand who Brahman is. A Brahman may or may not, he knows Brahman's there, but he doesn't necessarily know who Brahman is. So he hasn't surrendered and become a devotee. So devotees are automatically Brahmins. So by associating with devotees, then that aspect of worshipping the Brahmins is taken care of. And we study the scriptures, so the rishis are taken care of. So guru, sadhu, and shastra, by following that, you take care of your debt to the gods, the rishis, the forefathers, mankind, and the living entities. Okay? So that's the science of it. So, therefore, if the acharya says we do that, we do that. And even if we don't understand the science, because the acharya said we have faith, it works for us. But to throw out what the acharya says, and says we don't care for these rules, but the rules are sent by our acharya, then you had better be able to explain the science of it, that you have been, and come to that conclusion, and that you can make a decision that overrides your acharya. You know what I'm saying? In other words, if someone's going to make a comment, we don't care for it, then they have to be able to explain why. Or we worship Krishna. Okay, how are you worshiping Krishna? In your bathroom? Or in your kitchen? You know, or in your dress, in your house, you know, your rug on your floor. You know, it's just how you worship it, your money. where you make your money, where you have your parties, your interest. How, what about that Christmas party you just had? How is that connected to Krishna? Or that birthday party for your child, how is that connected to Krishna? You know what I'm saying? Explain that. Your birthday child for your party, how, what is that got to do in any way, shape or form, in any scripture, in any anything to do with the Vedic culture or for spiritual life or anything? But we only chant Hare Krishna. But how is it we had a birthday party? And at that birthday party, what will be there? There'll be a cake there, there'll be candles there, there'll be balloons there, there'll be all kids there, there'll be ice cream there. You go to anybody's birthday party, anywhere, all over the world, it's the same exact thing. So why is it so strictly followed in that way? That's rules. That's rules. But somehow the Vedic rules, having a samskara, oh, we don't care for this. But a birthday party, yes. Birthday, you're supposed to give in charity. Krishna stayed back because he had to give in charity to the Brahmins. So that means the person whose birthday it is, he should be giving away presents, not getting presents. He's supposed to be giving away to the Brahmins and that, to get blessings, rather than sitting there and being the self-centered center of attention and getting jealousy and envy. So that's the whole point. The Vedic system is for increasing piety, increasing life, and the modern is for shortening life and for increasing sinful life. The child becomes more and more self-centered. So, not a problem that you have a thing, this and that, but my point is that's just a Western samskara. And we can see the samskara is not necessarily for the benefit of the child. It's fun, they like it, but you could also find ways of making it fun other than that. You know? The child's grown up that on his birthday, then they invite over special guests and they feed them and the child helps people, you know, serve and all that. And then afterwards with the family members, they sit him down and feed him and all take care. Then it's a more intimate thing. Then it's a different thing. But then it has something to do with scripture. It's uplifting. You have a small kid who's interested to give in charity, to do all these different things. Completely different headspace. So much more mature. Light years beyond the Western conceptual. He's just his friends and doing what he wants and he's centered attention and he doesn't like something. He starts crying, throwing the tantrum. You know, you hear about these parties going on here, and little kids and like that, they're having a party. They're always throwing tantrums. Because it didn't go right, the what person they wanted to come didn't come, this, that. You know, it's a trip from beginning to end. So what's the benefit? So explain it. We're willing to listen. You know? We're going to say it's nice for the kid, and get special things, but a parent should be nice to the kid and doing special for the kid every day. Why this day? You know, and if they're so wonderful, these things, then why is it the women, when they get older, you ask them how old they are, and they say, none of your business. Right? So, birthdays are great for women up to 16, maybe 21. You know, after that it's kind of downhill. I remember my mother every year had a 29th birthday. Like that. She never got older than 29. Ask how old she is, she's 29. So every year, happy 29th birthday. But they don't make it a big thing, because then they're a year older. They don't like being reminded they're a year older. One more wrinkle, one more sag. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, it's not actually inherently an auspicious thing. The giving in charity, having the opportunities to do these things, that's purifying, that's uplifting. So the whole point is that if you're not going, means you can simplify, that's no problem. Follow things very, very simply. That's nice. You know, why get too complicated? But then, it should be connected to Krishna. And how is it connected? Okay, it's Prashad. Well, what are the candles? What Shastra mentions the candles? Make a wish. Who are you wishing to? You know, who are you praying to? Who's fulfilling that wish?
You know what I'm saying? Is that taught to the kid? And when you blow out your candles, you make a wish, and so you pray to Krishna to fulfill. No, I don't know. Just make a wish, heart and ball. So that's, you know what I'm saying? In other words, devotees need to think about what they're doing. Because by default, they're only going to follow the culture that they learned from their upbringing. What values they had before coming to Krishna consciousness, that's going to continue. That is their culture. And so, if you want to give that up, then you have to accept another one. But they'll give that up, not accept the Varnashram, and then there'll be a vacuum. And then when they're 50 years old, then they'll get back to quality time with the family and trying to raise the family nicely and do all those things. You know? And so, it's nice. Good that they're taking seriously the Grihastha Ashram and, you know, the time for their family and all that. But it's kind of late. And the methods they use may not be ideal. They'll go back to their former lifestyle and do that. And so, like that. It's just different. Prabhupada's family once came. You know, all the different members of the family, about 25 of them. You know, a lot of people. And so this was back when the Lotus Building was the only guest house. So the devotee that was guest house in charge, and he went to Prabhupada and said, okay, how many rooms should we give him? You know, there's so many, because there's men, women, everything. Prabhupada said, one. You know? He said, 25 people and this and that, one room? He says, yeah. He says, they have nothing to hide. You know, he made the point, the Westerners, you can put two people in a room because that's it, because they want to perform sinful activities, therefore they want privacy. He said the Indians, pious Indians, don't need privacy because they're not doing anything wrong. There's no need of privacy. So therefore 25 of them in a room and no problem. Because they have men's bathrooms and women's bathrooms separately. So then there's no problem. So they're all in there, 25 men there, just, you know, they sleep on the bed, sleep on the, put in extra mattresses, they all sleep on the floor, and so they're all happy. Because there's no inclination towards sin. Right? But you see, the main, you know, sacrosanct element of Western culture is privacy. Their own space, own time, nobody else in it, nothing. And so that's their deepest, most intimate need. So that means really they don't want to interface with other people, only when they want them. So that means then the relationships with others can't go very deep, because you only bring them in when you want. That makes some sense. So these are inherent problems in the non-Vedic culture. And so if you look at it, these are all problems that devotees are facing. Lack of trust, lack of faith, lack of social interactive skills, lack of respect. Right? I mean, what was the whole main problem that I saw? That was a driving force behind bringing down the guru system in the 80s, was that the God brothers weren't respected. Right? The God brothers should be respected. But it was simply a matter of respect. But those God brothers weren't respecting who was above them. So how could they expect that they're going to get respect? So they got rid of the gurus. And from 86, 87, there's been no respect for any authority in this movement ever since. You know, nowadays, if someone's a GBC, who cares? So as a temple president, who cares? Sangha, who cares? Nobody cares. Prabhupada said, who cares? Because the whole point was respect. But they're not willing to give respect, so how can they accept respect? So that's the whole point, is that if respect is the thing, then keep respect for their superiors in fact, and introduce that they should broaden that. In other words, the neophyte only sees Guru or only sees Krishna. That's the neophyte view. The Madhyama broadens that and sees Krishna and his associates, Guru and his associates. So the solution is not get rid of Guru. The solution is get rid of the neophyte mentality. Understand? So in other words, the solution has to be solved with the spiritual result. The culture has to be maintained, because the culture was because through a lack of culture, they tried to correct the situation and ended up with a cultureless situation. The solution has less respect than before. At least, you know what I'm saying? At least before, if the guru said respect this guy, everyone would respect him. But now it doesn't matter. Nobody cares at all. So this is just an example of, is that it's only social problems, but the social problems have to be operated according to the Vedic standards, according to Guru Sadhu Shastra. So the problem was, it wasn't being operated. It was too neophyte, it was too narrow. Guru is respected, nobody else was. Point is the others should be respected, but that means gurus are still respected. Then you introduce, but they think they'll take that away and that will automatically drop it down. No. You go back when Prabhupada was here. The second initiated devotees got as good a treatment, if not better treatment, than the gurus get today. At least in the temples that I went to. Sannyasis definitely got better. Temple president got better. And now guru sannyasis can walk into big temples around our movement, no one will even notice them. If somebody happens to know them personally, then they might come up to him and say, Hari Bol, and this and that. Otherwise, you could walk in and walk out, and nobody cares. Right? The second initiated devotees, they were respected more. Why? Because that second initiated devotee respected the temple president. Temple president respected the sannyasis and all that, and the GBC. And everybody respected Prabhupada. So everyone respected whoever was above them. Therefore, there was respect for everybody. But this idea is that, okay, all the respect is going to the gurus, remove the gurus, now it'll naturally come to us. No, it doesn't work. Respect is a principle. You don't respect who's above you, it doesn't go beyond. And then ultimately, then no one respects Krishna. No one respects Prabhupada.
You know? I've heard from devotees that new generation of devotees which are in prison time. So they have, because of such situation, they have different vision. So that's why they, at least, I would say, in the Eastern Bloc countries, CIS countries, devotees, they try to be more independent, like to be in communication environment, and just to participate occasionally, but not as that time when there was such, as you just said, respect for senior devotees, so there was some kind of desire to be more involved in activity and preaching.
Yeah, because it's just natural. Whatever the leaders are doing is what they're doing. If the leaders are just solving problems, then the common devotee will just be solving his problems. You know, it's just natural.
I heard from one lecture, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, very interesting description of Chinese family, the way how the Chinese families, they live together in big communities. So he said, like, if a young son in the family, he's going to get married, and they live together in big family, so the son is gonna live in the inner, how to say, part, in the inner room of the house, and the elder son, he will stay in the first room, and all rooms are connected, so like to go to the last room, one has to cross those rooms, you know, before. In the first room, you know, to go to the third room, one has to cross first and second room. Mm-hmm. So for his elder son, he stays in the first room. So that means his younger son, younger brothers, they will, every time they will go through his room. And that's their culture. Means he has more respect and disregard. He has more interaction with his
elder.
No separate rooms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You don't have to change. I mean, that's the point. Is it's not a problem that we're saying that one has to change to this. It's a matter of you just have to take up the chanting. By the chanting, you become purified, and by being purified automatically, then whatever is good will be accepted, and whatever is not good will be rejected. It's natural aspects of surrender. So as soon as you find something's not so important for you, then it will be dropped. And as something is, then it will. So that's the whole point, is they can follow whatever culture they want and try to engage it in Krishna service. And no one minds. You know? Like that. But the point is you will see an openness to progression. And what we're talking about is where one is regressing to one's old culture when one was following a higher culture and regressing, and then in that process of regression one is justifying it and actually saying it's superior or better or more practical or more realistic. That's not so good. Like that. Means in other words, when the devotees are broad-minded, that's the actual standard of liberality. Because broad-minded means you have a standard that's set by authority. But you can accommodate a broad spectrum of people who are not necessarily close to that standard. So that's broad-minded. And you can see how to engage them in Krishna service, no matter how far away they are from the standard. That's broad-minded. So that's real liberality. Modern liberalness means there is no standard. It's set by the wind. You know, today it's blowing east, so that's the standard. Tomorrow it's blowing west, it's the standard. So it has no standards. And so you just try to accommodate everybody into that. So it's just a feeling of goodwill. But it doesn't actually have any substance, because it's not based on Shabda, on scripture. It's only based on perception. So therefore, it only creates more and more and more problems. But we see Prabhupada could work with anybody. Right? He's in the Bowery with the lowest of the low. I mean, low people. Right? Lord Chaitanya starts with the most fallen. So he started with the hippies. So that means the hippies were the lowest, the scum of society. Right? Absolute. Their idea was just drugs and sex. That was it. You know? But Prabhupada said they had a mood of renunciation and they were searching. So that was, they were able to take up Krishna consciousness when they saw it. And because it has substance, they stick. They were intelligent people. But as far as the culture, it's the most regressive. I mean, nothing happens. I mean, it sounds ideal, but are there any communes that are working? Just based on love and peace and love and sex and dope? No. It means you read a history of all of them. They all go for a few months, a few years, and then break up. Or the farm keeps going, but the individuals in them go back to their jobs, go back to Wall Street. Yeah. So it just doesn't work. It doesn't. It's not a system. Yeah. Like that. So that's the problem. It doesn't last. So one has to be able to accommodate a broad spectrum. So Prabhupada worked with the lowest, and he brought them to the highest. So that's broad-minded. Liberal is to say, oh, they're fine, and just leave them like that. Don't tell them. Why do you tell the hippies that they have to shave their hair? Why do you tell them they have to give up their dope or sex? No, no, don't be so strict. We're not fanatics to be. That's not Prabhupada's standard. No, they move in the temple, they have to shave up. He was very strict. No one could come with long hair and live in the temple. You want to live in the temple? You shave. You don't want to shave? Visit. But you can't live in the temple. Because he was too worried that the dormant hippiness of his disciples would again come up. You know, by living with people who are attached to their hair. Because that was so important. Hippie's hair was like one of his most valued possessions. You know, and his hair, his boots, you know, his little leather bag to put his, you know, implements of intoxication in. You know, his felt hat, his work shirt. You know, these are very important parts. So his hair was of any of it, because he could take all the rest of it off, but his hair had to stay. Right? The hair is, you know, very important. So Prabhupada knew, he says, no, you move in, you shave up. You know? Otherwise, then the others will start to think, wow, I hate it. So broad-mindedness is our platform. Then we can accommodate anything practically. You know? I mean, for someone it's more important that they chant than they're vegetarian. They just start chanting, they'll advance. Automatically the heart will soften and they'll see what's the need of being non-veg. So automatically they'll become vegetarian by association. You don't have to, it's not a separate need of preaching. Like that. At least if there's interest, you can point it out, but the main thing is you're taking prasad. And prasad is what you offer to God. God accepts vegetarian food. That's why we're eating vegetarian. Does that make sense? So it's like that. So that's a very important thing, is the difference between broad-minded and the modern concept of liberality. Because broad-mindedness is based on Shabda, so Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Then you bring it down to the particular time, place, and circumstance of what you're in. Liberality means you only deal with time, place, and circumstance. And depending upon the time, place, and circumstance, your value system changes. So your liberality changes. You know, they're very strict with this person, very kind to that person. And then in the next instance, it switches. You know, the Prabhupada gives examples that they're out there, you know, save this animal, but they're eating other animals. You know, they're saving the blue whale, but they're eating cows. You know, so it's inconsistent. Their liberalness is inconsistent. Does that make sense? Had something left to do? Would you really think that Krishna would ruin it for thousands of people because of 11?
No, it's not just a question of 11.
No, but no, but it, but that's there. But as of now, does anybody talk about respect? Is authority a conversation that you hear nowadays? In fact, it's a conversation you can't bring up. It's a forbidden conversation. You know, along with, you know, Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. These are just forbidden topics. Like that. But at the same time, as you see, there's a need, because respect must be there, because it's ego. But it's a matter of, if you need respect, then at least you bring that respect in line with what's virtuous. Like that. Best is you bring it in line with transcendental, so you don't worry about it. But if that need is there, bring it in line at least with what's virtuous. At least perform the activity and do the work. So therefore, even though the devotees may have been overly proud, but the point is they were doing the work. In those days, they did the work. You know, if someone would criticize another, Prabhupada would say, first do what they're doing, then you talk. So he wouldn't stand for someone criticizing someone else. That principle wouldn't be allowed. And the person who's making the criticism, they would have to be the ones to be introspective. The person who is doing the service, he'll be purified by that. But the person who's criticizing, of what service is that? So Prabhupada would always say, that was common. You ask any devotee in those days, do what they do, then you talk. Even though the person had so many faults and it was obvious, but the point was is they were wholeheartedly serving Krishna. And you can see it today with many of those devotees. Even though you look at them, they don't necessarily dress, look like devotee, act like devotee, talk like devotee. You mention Prabhupada, tears come to their eyes. I mean, real tears. They can go on and on and for hours and hours glorifying Prabhupada. Because they dedicated their life to that man. I don't see much of that dedication these days. You know, I don't see dedicated 3-month devotee going out to a place he's never been, has no contacts, nobody, has no money, nothing, and is willing to go out there and just set up a center. You know, or even stick to Prabhupada's teachings. You know? There's people that have to fight to keep other devotees from changing Prabhupada's books to make them politically correct. You know? As if it's a discussion that you could change Prabhupada's books just because there might be a few intellectual women who won't appreciate some of the statements. Like that. You know, so the point comes down is that if you look at it, the point is everyone has to be introspective anyway, but you have to have some purity to be introspective. You know? To a new devotee, you don't have to say all this stuff. If someone's been around 3 or 4 years, then it's time for them to actually think. Are they turning their powers of observation on their own heart, or are they turning it on everybody else? That's the point. The devotional process is turn it on yourself. So the arrangements then weren't for the process of turning it on yourself. You know? Like that. You know, I mean, it may have had a little bit of the Chinese quality of standing up in front of everybody and saying, I'm so much of a nonsense and a rascal, and you have to cry and, you know, do all the right things. You know? But as far as Vaishnav, it doesn't necessarily have that character to it. You know? So, the result is where is authority? So authority is still needed and desired. So you see, devotees want to be authoritative. Therefore, committees, more and more committees are created, because a committee has authority. But the beauty of a committee is it has no responsibility. Because as soon as you call up the committee on it, each one will say, well, I didn't vote for it. I abstained. One or two honest people will stand up and say, yes, you know, this is the way it is. But most of the committees are easy thing you can hide behind. You have authority, you have the temple council of Brahmins. It just means devotees who want to make a comment about the temple council, about the temple management, but don't want to take responsibility. The president has to do their work, so the president becomes their lackey. They sit around, pontificate, and then the president has to do what they say. Then he's a nice guy. So they want that respect, but it's not coming from a virtuous platform. They're not doing the work. So that's the difference. When Prabhupada's here, people did the work. They were respected. They may have had bad qualities, their heart may not have been clean, but they were doing the work. So then they did deserve the respect. And if you leave it long enough, heart is purified. There's no other way. How else are you going to do it? The Western culture has a way to purify the heart? No, I've never heard of it. So, therefore, only by doing service, by full absorption, chanting the holy name, associating with devotees, and absorbing yourself in a service that matches your nature, you're fully absorbed. Therefore, whatever crazy thing devotees would get into that would be fully absorbed, Prabhupada would support it. Because they were fully absorbed in Krishna's service. And with time, naturally they'd be purified, and then they'll start using more and more gentle methods, more and more. It'll come with time. So that's Prabhupada, broad-minded. You know? So that's the thing. Now it's not. The point is not a concept of people should be engaged according to their nature and be supported. As soon as they do something wrong, you're out. So it's gone from Vaishnavism into Christianity. You know, I said, once you've sinned, you're eternally damned. So you don't have that in in Vaishnavism. You know, point is we may have done nonsense. Okay, so that nonsense shouldn't be done now. Now let's move forward. Like that, because nonsense doesn't have that much value. Devotional service does. But in the present scenario, nonsense actually has more value than devotional service. It's considered of greater weight. Someone does something wrong, that's of greater significance than service. So that means mundane morality is more important than bhakti. And that mundane morality is based on speculation rather than on Guru Sadhu and Shastra. So it's a bit precarious. So I personally wouldn't think that Krishna arranged it like this. This is just called Maya. Devotees not really understand what they're doing, meddled with Prabhupada's system. Prabhupada said the GBC is there for life. He did not say that 50 men can walk in and judge them and throw them out. He made no provision for that. So because of that, therefore, the society is it was Maya. They used Maya to try to correct it, and they got Maya. So, like that. And that's been observed, the materialists have observed that.
What was that?
Huh?
What was that? I missed that.
Missed that point. You ever read Animal Farm?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's the same business. I've heard, in my own ears, devotees say that this crew, you know, needs to be changed. You know, the old boys club. But that's exactly what this particular crew said about the previous one. The original GBC was old boys club. So then the new, you know, reformed GBC came in and stepped in and was supposed to take the society to a new age. But I guess the age, they didn't necessarily think that observe that it might go backwards. And so then devotees say the same thing about this new reform GBC, that we need to reform the GBC. Because the principle is not respect, it's not a matter of seeing what anyone's doing, what responsibility they're taking, how hard they're trying. It's just if it doesn't come out the way we like it, then, you know, so many considerations are there. This is a bit simplistic, but the point is unless it follows the way Prabhupada said, it's not going to work. Does that make sense? So the point is if the authorities can be reduced down to just, you know, public prajalpa, then where's the question of there being any sense of authority or respect? You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's just history, right? I mean, it's what the... Is it? Those who are history majors, then they have a saying. The only thing you learn from history is no one learns from history. Right? So, you take any revolution. You take the French Revolution. You know, typical of all revolutions, basically. Bourgeois means the second level, then complains they're not getting enough respect and facility. Right? Sound familiar? Right? The concerned God brothers, right? Then they agitate with the nobility, this, that. They don't get anywhere. Then they go to the public. They get the public on their side saying the nobility's bad. Right? They don't explain to it that there's only this particular aspect is bad. Right? Because it doesn't want to be presented that we want to be respected. You know, no, it's got to be that the nobility's bad. They're not going to go to the public and say, hey, we're the bourgeois and, you know, we want to get wealthy also and we want to enjoy like them, but they're not giving us facility and all that. So, hey, why don't you guys help us and let's get rid of the king so we can be just like them. I don't think it would politically fly. So you have to say that the bourgeois, I mean the aristocracy means the nobility is bad. Then, and you say that then you can enjoy, they're enjoying, why aren't you enjoying, why aren't this, and all this kind of stuff. Then you get it in there. Then the people rise up. We have this revolution, you remove the nobility, and then they go, okay, where is it? And then they're dissatisfied, and then next thing, the next head that goes is Robespierre. So that's the point. Those that started that, then they're the next ones on the block. It's just material energy, it's the way it works. So the Vedic system, we don't see that happening. You know, it doesn't work like that. You go, you discuss, and, you know, it's going that direction.
It's like this one woman, she's from a Indian family, and she was saying to me, there's no way I ever could consider finding fault with my father. It's part of the culture.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's very nice.
Mm-hmm.
It's,
yeah.
But that comes from like a proper level of understanding.
Yeah.
But because we came like from nature,
mm-hmm.
And so we didn't deserve the respect we got.
Mm-hmm.
So that shattered.
But it's shattering on the platform of Malecha understanding. The point is that girl, even if her father did something that was abominable, still she would respect him as her father. The activity that he performed, that's not good, but him as a person and what he's done for her still stands. That's human life. So the point is we can't blame it just on 11 people. Because many of those 11 people also understood that this has to wind down. With time, there's going to be more gurus. It's going to be, how many Vyasasans can you put in the temple? I heard Bhavananda myself say that when there's more gurus, we're taking out all these Vyasasans. He says 11 fit in there, but it says when it gets more, we're taking them all out. Everyone's just going to sit on mattresses. You know? They were talking about having Prabhupada's Vyasa one next to it that had a collage on it. You know, I mean, it was already going in that direction. It just naturally happens anyway. Because after a while they figure. But the point is how long can someone go on and saying because this guru fell down or because he was proud? Point is you take some of these gurus are so proud. But their zones were the most flourishing, opulent, biggest preaching places on the planet. Because the process of surrendering to guru, following order of guru, and being fully absorbed in devotional service was going on. So that's the beauty of it. Even if the guru is a Madhyamakanista, You follow it. You go back to Godhead. He may or may not go back to Godhead, but you'll go. Right? You have to remember, Dhruva Maharaj's mother went back to Godhead because of him. So, all Dhruva Maharaj's mother did was say, you got a problem, the only one can help you is God. Where's God? I don't know. I think he must be in the forest because all the sages go out there to look for him. So maybe he's out there. That was it. Nothing more than that. So I think that those 11 people gave a bit more than that. And for that, she went back to Godhead. Because he followed it perfectly, he went back to Godhead. So the devotional service is something beyond mundane morality and justice. That's the bottom line. And I don't think that Prabhupada would accept that zones and places can sit down and say that because their guru fell down, what is it now? This is 17 years ago, that still there's a problem in the movement. Especially when you see new zones open up today, and they flourish like anything. Because they don't have those misconceptions. And as soon as they start getting those misconceptions, you know, some devotee from, you know, the Western world who has these conceptions goes in and preaches these truths, so then you just see that the zone, the bottom falls right out of the zone. So it's just a matter. You follow Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, it's successful. You don't, it's not. It doesn't matter. I remember once one senior devotee from America went to Europe to see why is this East Bloc flourishing? And he came back and he gave a report to the, you know, the North American GBC. You know, it says, I wouldn't want to say it, but it appears that because they all respect and follow Guru, they have respect for Guru, they surrender their life to Guru, therefore the zones are flourishing. And in those same zones, when you take out this respect for Guru, they go down. So that's the key, that's the connection. For one who has faith in Guru and Krishna, then all the imports of the Vedic knowledge are revealed. So that's where it starts. It doesn't start with some management or some anything else. It starts with this. So unless there is faith in Guru and Vaishnavas, it can't function. Because fault, it's easy to find. Anyone can find fault in the moon, but no poet does that. You know? It means if someone sits around and criticizes the moon, what cultured person will take that person seriously? So if somebody has Krishna, who is everything, then the faults of material life, those are illusory. Those are shadows. So only someone who values shadow and illusion will take that seriously. You know? That's what it says. It throws back the person who finds a fault. That means they take the shadow and illusion as more important and more powerful than bhakti. Point is bhakti is real. It's substance. The whole universe of illusion is just illusion. That's why it says one holy name can clear all the sin of the universe. How much? The sin is not the big thing. But nowadays, sin is very strong. It's very important. Very important. He's sin. He's eternally damned, right? He'll be kept on God's left-hand side and eternally burned. It's Christianity, that's all. And of Christianity, it's Protestant. It's not even Catholicism, you know, or East Orthodox, or any of those. I think they're a little bit more liberal. It's definitely not Judaism, because in the Old Testament, everybody did something wrong. Right? You know, I mean, it's like everybody made a major mistake. But there's still the patriarchs. Moses didn't even get to go into, because he didn't have faith in the name. He had the faith in service, but not in the name. So he didn't get to go into Canaan. Right? They don't get much bigger than Moses. Right? Only one bigger than him, I think, is Abraham. Right? They all did something wrong. So they don't mind. The Protestant, they don't tolerate anything wrong. And you'll find the thing about Protestantism, there's no culture, absolutely no culture. That's the thing, one of the things they did is remove all culture. It's just Bob. You have the mood and the affection for God, that's enough. No ritual, no form, no... So that's the thing, no culture. So where does that come from? So all it is just the transference of conditioned nature. You grow up in a culture that has no culture, and that's against culture as a religious principle. You know, it's against authority. So then naturally, like what you said, they're just going to have the point. But the point is how long can we go on saying it's those people's fault? You know? As far as opulence goes, because nowadays opulence is very much desired, the devotees just talk economics. I don't think there was more opulence than there was in those 80s. Mm-hmm. Early 80s?
Nothing lacking.
Nothing.
Nothing lacking.
They had unlimited devotees, resources, everything. It's no question. It was just unlimited. Right? And it's not a matter of if they hadn't fallen down, you know, even if they stayed, no. But even that didn't matter. I saw zones where the guru fell down, the zone went on fine. Because they still had faith in the principle, and they still respected their guru and fell down. They didn't follow him, but they still had respect for him as a person. And that zone went on. It kept going. We have to get that. Australia. Yeah, it went on. There wasn't any difference when Bhavanam was there or wasn't there. In fact, they invited him over there, you know, because he was having problems. So come over here, we'll take care of you. You know. He went on. Fine. You know, Bhavanam the left here, Mayapur went on fine. Some zones, the guru left, in 3 weeks, the whole zone evaporated. 3 weeks. So it's just on the training. It's just on the training, the culture, the background. Like that. So, therefore, you can't blame it on them. External such that it all comes back to the individual. The individual, they want to be Krishna conscious, they can be. If not, then it's easy. Maya is like this. If it's so easy that you take one man and have him fall down, and you can wipe out the devotional life of thousands of people, you don't think Maya's going to go for that? So simple, so easy. One guy goes down, thousands disappear. So then, why that won't be the tactic? You know, how long can we go on like that? You know, it's like, the guru's this, the sannyasi's that, the GBC this, that. What about when you were a karmi? You know, the governments, the priests there, you know, the religious leaders, the social leaders, the community leaders, you know. I mean, what's so great there? You know, what was so fabulous there? You know, the divorce rate is great outside, or, you know, unemployment's fabulous, or, you know, it's so safe, you know, you can go out at noontime and have somebody hold you up. You know, it's fabulous, right? So that's the whole point, is what is so good about it? So even the continent's a material world, and we're a volunteer organization. If we went by who came forward that had the piety to go out looking, you might not have a whole lot of people in this movement. You know? You might not have a whole lot of people. You know, you see that up to basically Vishwanath and Baladev. But with Bhaktivinoda Thakur, then they had the cross. Because the Western culture was already influencing the whole world. Right? When they had their own cultures, it's another thing. They go out and look. But then when the Western culture comes in, it just breaks down all inherent cultures. It's in, you know. And so then by doing that, then they had to be able to cross into that and make people aware of spiritual life. And like that. And And so when you're doing that, it means everybody who's inside then has that same inherent fault. So then what's the need to criticize somebody else and blame our inherent fault on there? Oh, I have no faith because of this guy. No, you just don't have faith. Because you can't function without faith, so how are you functioning? That means you have faith in material energy. You have faith in your independence. You have faith that you have faith. Just that you have faith not in something that's necessarily sublime. So it's just an excuse. Otherwise, after 17 years, I mean, people joined at 17. They had enough of the material world. You know, they found it to be sickening. It's just the people are so superficial, nothing to offer, this and that. So how is it now, after 17 years, that they can't find some other alternative? How can't move on? You know? I think Japan and Germany built up quicker than that. They were destroyed. They built up. If there's faith in the process, then it just goes on. You know? The point that's being shown by Krishna is it doesn't matter if you're a private or you're a five-star general. If you stick your head up when you shouldn't, you get it blown off. That's all. So therefore, pride will get anybody. So that's the whole point. So that therefore, everybody under should be even more careful to be more careful about their devotion, their sadhana, their respect. Like that. So that you could say. And I would say even you wouldn't have lost so many if there was a better attitude. When Prabhupada was here, someone fell down, then they were supported. And they were trying to be placed back in some service and try to be supported. But the mood at that time was no, they have sinned, so then they have to leave. So many just disappeared. They just disappeared. They didn't want to go through it. After watching what Bhavananda went through, others weren't about to go through that. Of course, they had been deprived. But why would they be subjected to that? Right? Guhyamakriti Pichati, if you reveal your mind to somebody, you expect it's confidential. And then for the person to walk out of the door and announce it to everybody present, that's sinful. That's sinful. In the name of truth, what truth? A truth that ends up destroying the life of somebody by Manu is considered sin. It's equivalent to killing a Brahmin. So that's not truth. That's sin. And not even normal sin. That's mortal sin. That means the heaviest of sins. To break confidentiality, that's not. Otherwise, then where's the devotional process? That's sadvidvam priti lakshanam, six qualities. He doesn't say there's more. Eating together, prasad, you know, discussing philosophy and revealing the mind. Again, exchanging gifts and revealing the mind. So revealing the mind is out. Nowadays, forget it. Revealing the mind is out. You don't reveal your mind to nobody. You know? It's a serious point. So if that's not there, then why would you want to give anybody a gift or eat with anybody? If you can't reveal your mind, then why give gifts and why eat with them? You know, it comes down to that. There's no confidentiality. So therefore, so where is the devotional culture? Where is the opening for exchange between devotees? So this concept of truth is a modern, sinful, nonsense concept of truth. It's not Vedic. It's not reality. It's Maya. It's illusion. It's nonsense. That's not truth. You have to define what is truth. Fact is truth, or Krishna is truth. So if a fact is not connected to Krishna, it's the greatest lie. Right? So that's the point. That's what's being missed. That's the Christianity. That's the modern academician. So all it is this. It's just our own previous nonsense background this is creeping in, and we're thinking it's great and glorifying it and even justifying it. But it's just Maya. Otherwise, how do you have friends? You can't have friends. You can't be confidential. You can't have friends. Friend means someone who can reveal your mind to. You can't reveal your mind. You have no friends. So that's my point, is that means a devotee, if he has problems, he can't go to anybody. I know another god brother. He had problems. He was a sannyasi. He had some problems. He went to another god brother to give some advice. And the next thing you know, it's all out on the internet. So then from that time on, that god brother never went to anybody. And a few years later, he fell down. Because he could go to no one for help. Because this sinful idea of truth that everybody's got to know and I have the right to know. Who said you have the right? Prabhupada doesn't say you have the right. Mind your own business. It's not your business. You know, this idea is just nonsense, and this is on the culture of destroying our society, because there is no trust. So therefore, because trust, you can't trust. How do you trust? You can't go to a leader and tell them, you know, something is you're going wrong in your spiritual life, and expect that they'll keep it quiet. Because they feel, well, you're a public figure. They've actually made the rules. Sannyasis, gurus, they're public figures. So there's nothing about their life that can remain private. Everything has to be known by everybody. That is sinful. That is a nonsense decision. That means they're not people. They're just public property. They're just used, exploited. You know, but you know, in the past, so what? Correct the problem. Don't come up with a new fandangled idea that's nonsense. You know, we have to stick to our culture. We have to stick to Shastra. Otherwise, what's the meaning? It has no meaning. It hasn't improved anything. I haven't seen any improvement. 96, right? Bring together Prabhupada's family. I've seen it just get worse and worse. Because there's no trust. So if there's no trust, how do you have relationships? You can't. So that's the whole point. Until you have relationships, you don't have a social structure. Until you have a social structure, people are dissatisfied. If they're dissatisfied, then they're going to look somewhere else. They're either going to internalize their bhajan or go out into material energy. So that's a difficult one. This society doesn't have any philosophical problems. People will say it does, but you analyze it, it's not. Right? That's a social problem. They don't like the gurus because they're puffed up. And this, that's a social problem. That's not a philosophical problem. So whatever you take it, it's just social. So that's the point. It's, in the beginning, Prabhupada was just going to go by Bhagavad culture, Pancharatra culture. He didn't need much more. When he saw devotees needed more and had to be more independent, more economic and all, then he said, Ibhavan Ashram. Because those are your three social circles. Bhagavad, Pancharatra, or Vedic. Or any combination. So pure Vedic, we can't follow. Without the Bhagavad and the Pancharatra, Vedic has no meaning in this age. Right? Because we're not using it as a system of perfection, we're using it as an assistance to the Bhagavat and the Pancharatra, because we are having material needs. Yes. You find that? Yeah. That's the whole thing. If we're pure, we perform our sadhana. We are, you know, our heart is, you know, we have goodwill towards the devotees, then it'll work. Because oh yeah, the program. Oh, I see. By following the program, it just makes it work. Yeah. No, that's the beauty of it. Is that Prabhupada analyzed the whole, you know, modern situation, and therefore created the temple program, because the perfect program, the Bhagavat platform, then you're chanting the whole time, the whole morning program from Mangalarti up to Prasad, it's all glorification of Krishna. The whole morning program up to through Prasad is Pancharatrik, and also it has all the elements of the Vedic. So it's a perfect system. It means if one actually analyzes and knows these other systems, Bhagavat will always take it, but Pancharatrik, you don't find a better Pancharatrik program. It's the essence of the Pancharatrik program. Because everything that there is in the whole Pancharatrik system is all accomplished by the time you finish Prasad in the morning. You know, you've gotten up to the temple, you've arranged paraphernalia for the worship is being done, you've studied the scriptures, it means there's seven things, taking care of guests, devotees, reading the scriptures, chanting the holy name, that's what it is for, then, nam, dham seva is done, tulsi seva is done, all those are done, they're all worked into the program. So the full panchanga puja, everything is already done by, you know, time you finish breakfast. Because prasad seva is one of them. Distributing prasad, so charanamrita is distributed, flowers are distributed, the lamps are distributed. Guru puja is there. To do pancharatrik workers, you have to worship Guru. So then that's worked into the program. Right? So Bhagavatam is there, Tulsi is there. From the Bhagavat platform, then association of chanting the holy name, associating with devotees, Bhagavatam, worshipping and eating and living, doing service to the Dham. Because you clean the temple, you go up, it's all there. So the Bhagavat's perfectly in, the Pancharatrik's perfectly in. And in the Vedic, you get up in the Brahma Muhurta, you offer your prayers, chant the Gayatri, perform sacrifice. So Harinam Sankirtan is a sacrifice. Right? You eat remnants of food stuff. It's done. Right? Patana patana yajana yajana dana pratigra. Right? Studying, teaching. So we study Bhagavatam, we teach Bhagavatam. We perform puja, we do it for others. Right? There's those who are doing the puja, others are watching. Right? Accepting charity, giving charity. So we're distributing the holy name, we're distributing prasad, we're sitting. So it's all the duties are done. There's no more perfect system than this program. That's what Prabhupada said. If he had to do it over again, he'd do it exactly the same. He wouldn't change anything. So if we follow that, then we'll get the most benefit, because it's the most powerful program. You do that, chant your 16 rounds, follow the regular principles. You can't get a more powerful spiritual situation. No, it just stays. It stays strong. You find a little bit more devotees sit around the edges and talk this and that and do the management and other things like that. But other than that, no, it stays. It increases because it is transcendental. So that's the wonderful thing, is when all said and done, then if we just stick to these things that Prabhupada's given us. You know, he says he's given the structure, now fill it in. So the structure has to remain. If we change the structure, then what do you fill in? If the structure remains, then you fill it in, then it's perfect. Okay. So that's what means, in other words, only to create thought, you know, to create a matter of seriously looking at what's around us, then we make these points strong. But the point is the solution is very positive and easy. We just have to follow Prabhupada's program. You know, if we do that, it's nice. anything else?
How about, can I ask?
Yes, please.
I have a small question. Like, I have something in this book, Spiritual Master and Disciple, that unless one is initiated, all these demonstrative activities are useless. Mm-hmm. And one can again fall into the animal species. So, then I asked a couple of devotees outside, but I was not really satisfied. So.
What's your purpose? You want to remain uninitiated?
I want to get initiated. But
okay, so then what's the problem?
But then the curiosity arises is that I've been practicing for almost 2 years now. So where does the devotional credit go Krishna Vizhan?
It's there, it's Bhakti Sukriti. It all goes. It means if your purpose is to take up devotional service and through the process come to prema, then it all counts as part of the same process. That point is being made because there are people who figure they'll remain independent and not take initiation, and just on their own they'll do, and they're intelligent enough to do things themselves. So that statement is to guard against that misunderstanding. But for someone who's sincere about following the process, then it's all seen as one process. Does that make sense? It's just a matter is just to keep people from stopping at that point. That's the point. Okay? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Chaitanya Gaurav Prema.